I hate August. The month has a lot of bad memories for me. My father died in August. My wife left me in August. I gave up my name, Darlington Dede, in August. And even more agonizing, I stopped being a writer in August. It's hard to believe, but Friday the 19th of August will make it 8 years since I became this new person. It was the day I stopped being me. The day I walked away from it all. Honestly, it was hard, but given everything going on around me at the time, it felt like the right thing to do. I remember tossing my 3 good shirts, 2 Bibles, and Oge's wedding ring into my old duffel bag and called a cab. Just in case you're wondering why I have 2 Bibles, I'll tell you. One was from my mother. She gave it to me on my 18th birthday. The second I got from my father when I got my first job. I remember the cab driver commenting on the quality of the bag. Oga, this thing is original leather. The bag was a gift from the girl I should have married. But I didn't tell him that. If my parents weren't tribalists, I should have married Bam Bam. I remember them giving her grief and constantly antagonizing her because she was Yoruba, and they had vowed even before any of their children were born that none of us would marry from another tribe. In fact, they weren't even prepared to entertain someone from the village next to ours. Mama and Papa constantly drummed it into our ears that they'd never give their blessing to such a union. Us children, we knew that their decision was premised on something deeper than their love for Abiriba. It came from something else. Something they witnessed during the Nigeria-Biafra War. But we weren't allowed to ask questions or probe further than the much they were willing to share with us concerning the 60s and what us Igbos endured before and after the war. They said very little. I think the trauma made them close up. It made them suspicious of anyone that didn't have ties to Abiriba. I could tell this from their austere account of those dark days. Before we each settled down and started families of our own, my siblings and I occasionally ventured to the west and south of the country. One time, my youngest brother even went all the way up north, but that relationship didn't last long. Knowing that our parents would sooner disown us than allow us to marry someone that wasn't one of us was always a determinant of where our hearts went. After 7 years of dating, I let Bam Bam go so she could marry a man she didn't love. Now that I think about it, my parents had been shutting people out and canceling them from our lives long before cancel culture became one more thing the world had to worry about. I'm not a tribalist, but I ended up doing what was expected of me as a first son. I gave them an Abiriba daughter-in-law. Oge Nwosu and I got married in August. Oge's wedding ring was the last item I flung into the bag before zipping it up. I couldn't get rid of it, and I didn't know why. I had tried so many times, but I couldn't. I bought the ring in Dubai a few days to our wedding. Now that I think of it, that work trip to the UAE happened in August as well. I wonder why she insisted on an expensive wedding ring if she knew she was going to give it back to me someday. Before the cab driver showed up that night, I listened as the sound of heavy rain pelted the roof of the dingy hotel that had been my hiding place since the police put out an APB for me a few days earlier. Darkness and rain provided the alibi for my escape from the raging storm that had become my life. Before that day, I was somebody else. I was a divorcee with 3 children that lived with their mother. I was a celebrated author with 4 award-winning books, 2 of which were being considered for screen adaptation. I was a property owner living in a house I bought with the prize money of $100,000 I received when my 3rd novel won an international award that had the endorsement of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. I wanted to tell the cab driver all this as we sped into the night, but I didn't. I didn't know who to trust. I didn't even trust the person waiting for me at Seme, even after giving him 3,755,000 naira to purchase a new identity and passage across the border to this place I now call home. A place I cannot disclose. A place I wait tables and I vowed never to go close to a laptop or computer ever again. My personal safety and the safety of mankind depended on it. Though my parents said all the time that I started writing when I was around 9 or 10 years old, there was no evidence that this was true. My response to the question of when I began writing in every interview I gave was that I started writing when I joined my secondary school press club at 13. I was young. I didn't even know what it meant or that there were people who didn't know how to write. My roommates in my third year in the university were the first set of people to call me talented. They would steal my poems, pass them off as theirs, and it worked on the girls every time. While they were busy bringing different girls to the hostel because of my writing, I was pining for Oge. Oge was one of my roommate's girlfriends. We didn't start dating until we were both out of the university and she discovered the truth behind the poems that brought all the girls to room 211. The first indication that my writing was a blessing and a curse was the dissolution of my marriage. I don't know if I would have realized it had my agent, Frida Novogratz, not brought it up jokingly, but it jolted me after she said it. Oge walking out on me after 7 years of marriage was the plot of my first novel, Sometime Soon, Coming Alive. In the book, I told the story of a successful author whose wife left him, taking their three adopted children with her because he put his writing above his family in a way that was very disturbing. The similarity between fiction and reality was uncanny. It was eerie, no doubt, but I and my team, plus a few other people in the know about my failed marriage, were quick to dismiss the similarities as mere coincidence, even though I kept hearing Oge's voice in my ear saying things like, "Darlington, you're half man, half Dell computer," or "Leave those people in that book and talk to us who are here with you." And then President Umaru Musa Yar'Adua died in 2010. Everything that happened to that poor man was exactly like it was in my second novel, Hail to the Charlatans. The only difference between art and life in that instance was that in my book, the president was Igbo and not Hausa. Another difference was that after the death of the fictional president in the hospital in Austria and all of the lies, cover-ups, and horse trading that happened afterwards, the National Assembly decided to honor the Constitution and do the right thing by all the parties concerned. They didn't like it, but after a nationwide protest that crippled the entire country for days, the legislators had no choice but to cave in. Yeni Bakre was sworn in at Eagle Square amidst tight security. She became the first female to hold the office of President and Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. People were freaked out. The whole country was talking about me and my book. Honestly, at this point, I too was freaking out. Why did it seem like the things I wrote in my books were coming alive? It was weird, and a go-to excuse about coincidence and whatnot didn't hold water anymore. It was hard, and at this point, I was starting to fall into depression. Thankfully, I had a smart agent who was well-respected in the literary community. With her help and skillful spin of the story as another coincidence and brilliant storytelling on my part, we moved on from what should have left a lesser man broken. Time passed. Things happened. The world forgot. Bombs went off in Asia. Economies crumbling in Europe, governments were overthrown in Africa, and from America, reports reaching the rest of the world was that racism was rife, alive, and well, in spite of their black president. Essentially, people moved past the whole Yar'Adua death saga, hail to the charlatans comparisons. I mean, What was a mere novel when the world had bigger problems like wildfires, hurricanes, and climate change to contend with? But it happened again. In Chibok, Borno State, Northern Nigeria, April 14th/15th, 276 teenage girls kidnapped from their dormitory in the middle of the night by extremists, and the government was clueless as to how to handle the situation. Hashtag ruler of the night was just as popular as hashtag bring back the girls, and everyone was tweeting it from all corners of the world. Ruler of the Night was my third novel. Remember when I mentioned an award-winning book that earned me $100,000? That's the one. Plot for plot, twist for twist, years before the Chibok abduction, I wrote about it. It was all in the freaking book. For weeks, three hashtags dominated the trending chart. I have already told you two. The third one was hashtag Darlington Dede must go. I was scared. That was when I first thought of running away. But where would I run to? Where would I go? While these thoughts were going through my head, enter the DSS. They said I had serious explaining to do. I must know something to have been so spot on. They were absolutely convinced that I was in bed with the terrorist and that I could take them to their hiding place in Sambisa Forest, because in my novel, 257 girls came back home. The rest never came back. Those that returned were rescued through the efforts of TK Ojota, the protagonist in my story. TK was a fearless investigative journalist slash writer with ties to Israeli mercenaries. The man of the Department of State Security said I was TK. The thing that perplexed me the most, though, wasn't how they came to the conclusion that I knew how to get the girls back. It was the silly demands they started making on me to write now that it was apparent that I had some kind of superpowers. They said the president wanted me to write a novel about Nigeria's economy improving. Another shocking one they claimed was also from the presidency was that I wrote a novel where the people loved the president so much they held a referendum and made him president for life. Write a story about a landlord that has stroke for being wicked to his tenants. Write a novel about a DSS officer that took a bullet for the president. The officer's heroics pays off because the president now makes him minister for defense. Write a story about this man that sleeps around and his wife never gets angry. Write a story about a man from Ayetoro that found the cure for cancer. Write a book about a woman in Jalingo that had a baby after 11 years of marriage. Write this, write that. Crazy request, all of them. While I was locked up for months and made to write these crazy stories by the men that should have been out there looking for the kidnapped girls, my mind was on the King of Pox. I wish I could tell you about my escape from detention, but I'm afraid I can't. That would be giving out too much information and it would be dangerous for my collaborators. I didn't know how much time the world had before the storyline in my fourth novel played out for real. The King of Pox was about a deadly viral disease that threatened to wipe out the world. In the book, the lead character, a female doctor, dies, preventing the spread of the disease in Nigeria. From my hiding place, I contacted Frida. She thought buying back all the copies of the book in circulation might do the trick, so we went out on a repurchasing spree. We had only bought back 311 copies of The King of Pox when the story broke worldwide. Ebola would wipe out the world. Everyone was afraid. There was nothing I could do from my hotel room. I read my two Bibles interchangeably. I prayed, but that was all I could do. Ameyo Stella Adedevo died on the 19th of August 2014. That night, I fled Nigeria and I've never written ever since. Lately, I've been getting inspiration to write a story about a general overseer in a mega church in Nigeria who is beaten to death by members of his church. But I won't do it. Darlington Dede is dead. And the moral of this story, if there is one, is that you should write your own stories. You never know which of them might come true. Hi there, my name is Michael Afenfia and this is Write Out Loud. If you've enjoyed the story you just heard, please do well to like, share and subscribe to this YouTube channel. And I'll see you on the next one.